Before I begin this episode, I have a quick public service announcement. I believe that most of my listeners live in New York State, so just as a reminder, early voting began yesterday, the 26th of October. From my firsthand experience voting in Niskayuna, the line was out the door, and there was about a half-hour wait. I'm not going to tell you how to vote. You can probably figure out most of my politics from the show, so let me just make 3 points. First, do go vote. Get in there early so that it's done and you don't have to try to cram it in last minute. Second, before you go vote, visit your county's Board of Elections website. Many counties, if not all, will allow you to view a sample ballot, and this way you can go into the voting booth with a plan already in mind. Third, after you've voted for president, senate, and the various state and local offices, make sure you turn the ballot over. On the back of the ballot, there will be at least one statewide initiative, and depending on where you live, there may also be various local ballot questions. So, make sure you turn the ballot over and fill out both sides. For those who live outside of New York State, sorry, I don't have any specific guidance, but I would implore you to take advantage of early or mail-in voting if it is available to you, because it looks like this is going to be another gonzo whopper election with blockbuster turnout. And if you want to get ahead of that curve, you got to do this. Right. On with the show. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 153 of Little Brother for the 27th of October, 2024. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. I can't even figure out why somebody would do such a thing. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. They say that all good things must come to an end, and so it is that the Android release of SyncThing will be ending. The app's author states, quote, "Unfortunately, I don't have good news on the state of the Android app. I am retiring it. The last release on GitHub and F-Droid will happen with the December 2024 SyncThing version," end quote. This change does not affect SyncThing for desktop or laptop computers, but it does sadden me because, well, I was using that in order to avoid cloud-based ways to back up my data. ARM Holdings, which is the organization that owns and licenses the ARM processor architecture, has threatened to cancel Qualcomm's license to design ARM chips. ARM holds that Qualcomm has breached their contract with ARM and infringed on ARM trademarks. Qualcomm has 8 weeks to dispute the matter before the cancellation takes effect. If the cancellation takes effect, this will have a significant impact on the mobile device market as most cell phones use ARM processors, with a significant portion being Qualcomm. In about 6 months from now, it's going to be a lot easier to cancel streaming services. The Federal Trade Commission issued a rule this past week requiring that cancellation of streaming services be uncomplicated. The cancellation mechanism needs to be clear and decisive, so that once activated, all billing for the service must stop immediately. This is a significant victory for the consumer, and needs to be followed up by similar rules for, well, everything. So, I mentioned Fortinet last time in the alerts. Ars Technica is reporting that there appears to be a zero-day vulnerability in FortiGate. Big surprise. Based upon feedback from administrators of the product, and that Fortinet is clamming up about it, which is the opposite of what you need to do to solve these things. Thankfully, the community is providing the support that the vendor isn't. Keep that in mind the next time you are told that you can't use an open source tool because it's not supported by the vendor. In an act of poor timing, Rockwell Automation have announced a partnership with Fortinet to secure operational technology environments, aka OT. The prime difference between OT and IT is the focus. In OT, you are dealing with industrial machinery for which outages and downtime may represent exceptionally high costs in lost productivity, lost product, or safety issues, such as the loss of a control of a manufacturing process. Fortinet is exactly the right company to be protecting that. Finally, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Chinese threat actors have been attacking the mobile devices of the Trump, Harris, and Vance campaigns. No mention of walls. Of course they have. This is a simple matter of one country influencing another. And it should not surprise anyone. I would imagine that if you found the right breadcrumbs, you would find attacks coming from other places as well, and this should not come as a surprise or a shock to anyone. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Time? It's been busy. We will start in the Canadian city of Calgary, Alberta. It seems like the city's public library system suffered a breach that resulted in the full closure of all 22 branches. At the time of this recording, the library's website had a message that reads, quote, "All locations are open for regular hours with modified service. All due dates for borrowed materials have been extended until further notice. Please do not return items to locations at this time," end quote. A threat actor known as Satan has breached retail outlet Hot Topic. With over 350 million customers' personally identifiable information, this might be the biggest retail breach ever. The asking price for a copy of the dataset is $20,000, or alternatively, they are asking for $100,000 from Hot Topic to remove the data from the market. Back in episode 136 and 140, I discussed the breach of genetic testing organization 23andMe. It appears that the company are now settling and may pay up to $10,000 to victims of the breach. Unrelated to the breach, the company are also in the process of finding new ownership, which means that pretty much all of the data that they have collected will be in new hands. I'm honestly not sure how I feel about that. Thank you. Last episode, I mentioned that the Internet Archive were breached. Between then and now, they got their systems back in service in a read-only capacity, which is a good thing. But before the week was out, they got pwned again via a stolen access token. However, at time of recording, they are back in service. I'll end with a bit of good news. The Secretary of State for the state of Georgia claims that they have successfully fended off a significant distributed denial of service attack. State officials opted to report the attack because of the sensitivity surrounding the current election, especially given the potential for foreign meddling. I'll just mention also that I'm glad that they did, because it serves as a reminder that we hear about the failures, but successful defenses happen every day, and you don't generally hear about them. I've mentioned before the idea of a geofence warrant. The general concept is that the warrant effectively applies to anyone whose phone was inside of a line on a map in a given time frame. Did you accidentally walk past a protest? Well, now there's a search warrant with your name on it. Apparently, back in August, the Fifth Circuit Court decided that this was not acceptable and shut them down. I didn't cover it because I was on my summer hiatus. The news now, however, is that the government is, no surprise, appealing that decision. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Mississippi is asking for an en banc hearing of the case. For those not familiar with the term, an en banc hearing is one in which all of the judges are present on a case, and this is one of the options that is made available for an appeal. 404 Media has a detailed article talking about a tool that can track cell phones at abortion clinics. Of course, the reality here is that they can track cell phones anywhere. In most cases, the idea of being tracked is creepy, but possibly not actually dangerous. However, as the politics of the country become more divided, the idea that there's a record of everywhere you may have been is increasingly disturbing. Oh, did I mention? A civilian organization were able to buy this product and work with its data. Yeah, so it's not just the government anymore. Speaking of tracking movements, cell phones aren't the only tool available. AI firm Veritone have announced that they now have the ability to track vehicles and people without needing to even read license plates or pick up transponders or cell phones or reading biometrics. I do wonder about its accuracy. The tool is available to the public, so this'll be fun. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. I've talked a few times about how there's a portion of the population that would prefer to work from home versus commuting. While it is recognized that some jobs can't be worked remotely, my current job being one of them, those that can probably should. And that brings us to Sam's Club. According to an article in Fortune magazine, Sam's Club made the demand that all of their office staff that have been working remotely need to return to the office. According to that same article, as a direct result, Sam's Club is now in the market for a new chief technology officer. This is not the first organization to fuck this up. I mentioned Tesla messing this up all the way back in episode 91. And these guys are probably not going to be the last. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fogaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Joe Cadillac, Seth Hall, Thriller at Play, and Azriel for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Punk music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 154 will drop on the 10th of November if the country survives this election. Stay safe and be well.